In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hat.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Magical Talking Hat episode 9. Coming up in this episode, we pull an Azure Talon question out of the hat and I stab myself in the face.
No, don't do that, because I'm the only one that has to see it.
Hopefully we won't do that.
Do it later, and maybe your wife can film it, and you can put it on YouTube or something like that. But don't do it while I'm sitting here.
Okay, anyway, welcome to episode 8. I'm Tony.
And I'm William.
And this is the Magical Talking Hat. Wait, did I say episode 8? Sorry, episode 9.
Yes, it's episode 9.
I said episode 9, and then I said episode 8, and now it's episode 9. It's 9! It is
being,
9.
It's back to being episode 9, okay.
We're not going back to the Azure Talon episode, especially because I think he and one other guy are the only people who have listened to it as of this recording.
No.
But anyway, welcome. We are sitting here in the moderate humid heat of the house. William is wearing a freaking fleece sweatshirt and long pants because
it's not
he's
that
William.
Thick. Well, the long pants.
Traditionally,
long pants.
For those of you familiar with the book or the different movie adaptations of Frank Herbert's Dune, William tends to go around dressed in what is called a still suit. And so pretty much from the neck down, he's completely covered in sort of a ribbed rubber contraption. But I hear he only loses up to 3 tablespoons of water a day.
It recycles.
Also, he has blue within blue eyes.
Anyway. I've been told that.
Yes.
I don't even know what that means.
And yet. I'm going to stop for a moment here. We have... I want to do an important thing. The hat made me aware of an email. It was an email from longtime friend and only friend at this point of the show, Mark. Because Mark's still the only one who's told me anything about how the website works for them. And
which we appreciate very much.
Yes.
Thank you, Mark.
And in fact, we appreciate it very much that I'm going to address this. Normally, I would not address this because somebody emailed the hat with some stuff for William and some stuff for me and some stuff for the hat. And it was all very long and much bigger than you can normally put on a little half 3x5 card and not really in a working format and everything.
So this is why the hat notified you about it.
Said, what the crap to do with this? Yeah, except didn't say that because the hat doesn't talk. And normally I would say we can't work with this, but as a favor to Mark, because Mark has been doing us favors here and checking this stuff out, I'm going to do this. But if anybody normally sends something with this much crap in it, it's going to get severely chopped down or even disregarded because it just, I can't, the hat and I can't work this out. But this time, Mark, this one's for you. Anyway, let's see. Mark wanted to mention some of his favorite podcasts, and I like that because most of them are also some of my favorite podcasts.
Oh, good.
He mentioned basically the Escape Artist podcasts, which are these short fiction podcasts. There's 3 of them with different genres, and what they are is they are genuine. Like these people go out and get actual short fiction from published authors in most cases. Pay them actual money so that they can perform them on these podcasts. And so it's a very cool way to get short audio fiction for free. Good, good, good quality stuff. And in different genres, like I said. The original one is called Escape Pod. It's at escapepod.org, and it is science fiction. Great stuff. There's also a sister podcast, Pseudopod, spelled... like you would spell P-S-E-U-D-O-P-O-D .org, which is horror fiction, which is very cool for me because I find that a genre that is difficult to track down, especially in short fiction form. So that's been very neat. And then the latest one, which has still been around for a few years now, is Podcastle, also at podcastle.org, which is fantasy. Escape Pod used to handle some of the fantasy stuff as well. It was just sort of a speculative fiction thing, but now they tend to go more for sci-fi, and Podcastle goes more for straight fantasy. In general, if you like one, you'll probably like all three, barring personal taste for genre. But I'd say the quality of both the narration and the quality of the fiction itself is comparable on all three, and the quality of production also. So I encourage you to check them out, and so does Mark. And Mark added one that I'm not familiar with called DecoderRingTheater.com, and theater was spelled R-E, Decoding Room Theatre. Theatre.com. DecoderRing. When I first saw it, I was like, Decodering? No. DecoderRingTheater.com. Apparently they have a couple of different serials going on there that he's fond of. I can't speak to them, but he likes them, and we like him, so go check them out. He had a question for William, which actually makes me wonder if he is caught up, because the question was that he loves Stuck, your comic, your webcomic, very much, and wanted to know if you were going to do any more.
Oh. Well, yes, I am, as we discussed in
a different comic, yes.
A different one, though.
Stuck will not be added to.
No. That wouldn't make any sense.
No, which you got to go check it out, and you can send. But yes, you are going to be doing another one about James Bartleby and his traveling assassin circus or something like that.
It's called Morley Gray. He is an assassin who's rethinking his life.
Yes. Okay. That. So yeah, that's going to happen. Anyway, he asked me about the two podcasts I keep trying to pimp all the time, Nerdist and Happy Jacks, because he's listening to both, and he really likes Happy Jacks, and he says Nerdist is just mediocre. But they both have fairly extensive back catalogs at this point, and he wanted to know if it was worth it going back to the beginning. I say yes. Now, I'm biased, because I do that with all podcasts and stuff. But because they aren't, especially Happy Jacks, I would say, but also Nerdist, they aren't particularly time sensitive, so you might as well. And I think it's good stuff, and I think it's fun to see the growth in them, especially the Nerdist one, which has a lot of comedy to it. You sort of get more of a feeling from listening to it. Happy Jacks is fun to listen to because there's a lot of evolution in the show. They change a lot of things. They have gone through a couple different surveys of their listeners to sort of what they like and what they don't like, and have adjusted the show accordingly. Hmm. And a lot of the real grassroots basic RPG stuff that's really good to know is in the beginning. So I would recommend starting from the beginning, because what's your hurry? I mean, they're not ones that you necessarily have to be real caught up on. I finally am caught up on Happy Jacks, and I was caught up on Nerdist. I'm a little behind now again. But yeah, so I would recommend going through the whole catalog. But they're not, you know, serial in the traditional sense, so if you don't do that, you're still probably okay. And then you had a question for the hat that was ridiculously long and contrived, so much so that not only could it not fit on a card, I'm not even going to say it the way he said it, I'm going to slim it down.
Okay.
Because it was one of those elaborate ones, like, to make sure you don't come up with a loophole answer. He said a whole bunch of stuff to, like, cover all the bases.
A loophole answer.
But basically what it comes down to is you're in the zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
And the slow, shambling zombies are coming after you.
Right.
And you manage to escape them by getting in a car. And it takes a little bit, but you escape them. And just about the point that you're out of range of them, you think, you run over somebody with your car. What is the proper protocol in that situation? What should you do? And I'm sure Mark's going to write the show and tell us how I butchered that question. But too bad. I have a podcast. You don't.
Okay, anyway. So you get in a car that's working, and you're driving away.
Yes, yes.
And you've just
evaded these zombies that have been chasing you.
And you...
And you're, like, looking back to see that, you know, and, like...
And boom, boom, you hit some... thing.
Someone. It says someone.
And you're pretty sure it's a person.
Let's go with that. Okay, I don't believe, oddly enough, that he specified that, so.
It's a person. And I suppose the conundrum here is it a zombie, or is it someone who's not a zombie? And if it's not a zombie, you probably have an ethical or moral obligation to get out and check on them.
I have trouble with this, because I'm like the first guy to die in the zombie apocalypse. I'm the guy who doesn't get that his friend is eating brains now, and he just leans over and, like, bites me and whatever. I'm the guy... I break most of the rules from Zombieland, but especially the cardio one. Like, I couldn't outrun a zombie to save my life. Even the shambling ones, I would probably have trouble outrunning, because I'm that slow. And pretty much any sort of revolution or uprising or apocalypse or anything, I'm dead right out of the gate, so... If I somehow manage to survive, I think my foot is on that gas pedal, and it's staying there. But by that point, I don't know. I mean, I've clearly already pooped myself, so the car might not smell very good anyway, so I might want to get out. But the whole rest of the world smells like rotting corpses, so yeah, at that point, I think I'm just running. Especially because if I ran them over, I was probably going pretty fast, and they're probably dead anyway.
Well, that was going to be my thought, was that it probably, yeah, if you're driving very fast, and you probably are driving absolutely as fast as you can, it's a zombie apocalypse, so you don't have to worry about, you know, police or stoplights or anything else. So the odds are you're going fast enough that that person didn't survive anyway, and you probably, even if you got a glimpse of them, wouldn't have even been able to tell.
Well, as I'm going to say, I can rationalize to a certain degree. If something happened so I was fairly confident, A, they weren't a zombie, and B, they were still alive after I ran them over, I would probably stop and grab them and throw them in the car.
Yeah, I would too.
Because, yeah, I can't get away with that. But as long as I'm not fairly certain, I would totally tell myself it was a zombie or they were already dead and keep going. Because I'm a wuss. But as we said, this is all hypothetical. Because not because zombies aren't real, but because I would already be dead.
See, now I'm really starting to, you know, as you know, I overthink everything, so...
Really?
Yeah, now you're really kind of getting me thinking about this in ways that I didn't think I would think about it.
Well, you think on that. We can't spend a lot more time on this. We've already given Mark his almost full 15 minutes of fame. It's more like 12.
I wonder if they picked that up.
And that motorcycle rev was to let you know that we are still... badass. I don't know. I live in a weird neighborhood. Anyway.
I don't know. I'll bet they couldn't hear. This microphone's really strange.
Probably not. This is strange. I love this microphone, but it would be better if we had two of them.
Yeah, probably.
Because we really should be close. But that's for the future when we're rich and famous. So, William, how was your week?
It was productive.
Yay!
How was yours?
You're more...
There, I asked you, see?
You so lied, though. Asked. You're hanging out on Facebook. You posted several things on Facebook.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
I might have shared...
Yes,
same as posting.
Well, I believe, and with your own little commentary on how awesome something was or something.
I did?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
You typed things.
I typed things. I didn't say I wouldn't do anything. I said I would like things and other things. Wasn't specific.
I want to go back and find that post because I think you're backtracking.
I'm trying to get a lozenge out here because
he is trying to get a lozenge out. If really you know what I mean,
it's butterscotch.
Why would that's not good for a cough?
Well, you know, really the lozenge works on the lozenge. That's such a great word, don't you think?
I've always loved it. I planned to name my first child Lozenge.
Well, I don't think your child would like that, but
I plan to do a lot of things
really
that
just
my child would not like.
On the well, yeah, I'm sure you do. It really just works on the principle of, you know, just like if you have a drink or something. You know, there's nothing really. I mean, they try to put medication and stuff to if you have a sore throat or whatever, but basically the cough suppressant aspect of it is just producing saliva.
I prefer Vicodin lozenges.
Vicodin.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, my week. It was fine. It was great. How was yours? There, I asked. You can't accuse me of being rude anymore. And you know what? I never have anything to talk about anyway because I just work all the time. So,
okay.
Tell me about your week.
Let me tell you one thing first, Buster. I can always accuse you of being rude. I can accuse you of all sorts of things.
This is true. And you often do, so.
And will continue to do so. My week was... it was okay. I worked less than I thought. Remember how I was going to go back to work on Monday? I ended up not going back to work till Wednesday.
Oh.
They called and they're like, the stuff's not ready yet. Don't come back till Wednesday. So I've only had two work days since I spoke to y'all last time.
Wow.
But in that same time, I have seen three movies. So I have been quite busy in that front. On Friday, as I had intended, I went and saw Thor.
Can you tell me if that was any good? Because I don't want to waste my time if it's awful.
No, it's very mediocre, though, for me. It is very different from the film X-Men, the first X-Men film.
Mm, yeah.
It is very different. A lot of things that were good about X-Men, bad about this. Things that were bad about X-Men, good about this. It varies a lot in terms of specific qualities. But when you average everything out in terms of how good a movie it is, I would put it about that level.
I'm not sure I understand what that means.
Well, as I've discussed before, when it comes to like superhero comic book movies,
yeah,
we got the two Batman movies, the recent ones, and the two Iron Man movies up there.
Yeah, right up there, sure.
And then we have a huge jump down.
Yeah.
And that's basically where, in a distant, distant fifth, we have X-Men floating around there.
Oh, okay. Which X-Men?
The first one.
The first one, even, okay.
Maybe the first two. I kind of like the second one. Not the third. Third one sucked. But anyway. I'm also really pissed about First Class, but I don't even have time to get into that. And then below, then, we drop again fairly significantly into just the mass of, whatever.
I got you.
You know, kind of thing. And Thor is probably around X-Men. It's really mediocre. And the more time goes by, the more I'm like, It's very pretty.
Okay.
But has a lot wrong with it. Some of which may be the fault of Thor, the comic. I've never been that into it, and it doesn't work. Some of it is, I don't know. I disagree with a lot of people. A lot of people think Natalie Portman was one of the best things about it. I think she was one of the worst things about it.
Wow, and you like her, so that's not...
I tend to like her. I think she's being way overdone right now, but...
Oh.
But, yeah, it was weird for me in that. It started off kind of cool. It has great effects and things, and then it got really boring in the middle. Mm-hmm. And then by the end, it had kind of gone off the rails for me, so it was a little bit weird.
What else did you see?
Well, 2 days after that, I saw, because I specifically recorded my DVR to show it, because it was premiering the day after Thor came out, was Sci-Fi Original Pictures' Almighty Thor.
And that was on TV?
Yes.
Oh.
And that was their ripoff. Because there's a company out there, I forget the company's name, but there's a company that makes ripoff films when films come out.
Oh.
Like, immediately, like they hear one's coming out and they quickly throw together some cheap shit.
Really?
And rips it off, yes. And they've made films such as Transmorphers, Snakes on a Train.
No.
Yes.
You're making like stuff up
again. I am not making this up. This is a real company. They take $5 and throw together a movie and they put it out there. I don't really know why, but they do.
Hey, why didn't they make
a fake Titanic? I think.
Why didn't we start that company?
Because I'm too lazy and you don't know about things.
Oh, that's right.
But anyway, so apparently, oddly enough, this company, according to one of my sources, made this film, but this time they made it for Sci-Fi Pictures. Which in and of itself is one of the shittiest movie-making companies in the world.
So far, yeah.
Sci-Fi Original Pictures are always horrible. But I wanted to check this out, and I'm dead on the inside now.
It was really bad, huh?
It was unbelievably bad. Like, I barely sat through it. And I feel... I'm questioning myself, like... I feel that there is something definitively wrong with me that I was able to. It was awful. The villain was played by Richard Grieco. And even by Richard Grieco's standards, this was a shitty job. Richard Grieco phoned it in. Richard Grieco, best known for being on 21 Jump Street for a while and then a shitload of B-movies after that.
We should create a superhero who watches really bad movies, and they watch a movie that's so bad, it mutates them into a superhero.
I like that idea. And people ask why I watched the whole thing, and I question this a lot, because a lot of times I was like, I should stop. This is so... It wasn't, like, even funny. It was just boring. And, oh, it was so bad. And I think I watched it because I needed to be sure, for the sake of the world. Like, I didn't want later to tell people about it and have them be like, you know, I didn't want the slightest doubt that some poor little kid out there or something was like, well, maybe it got better later. Or, you know, maybe at the end it turned out it was all a joke. Or maybe something happened after you stopped watching that redeemed it a little bit. And so I had to watch, even through the credits, just to make sure that it was just 100% all-consuming shit. It was.
Is that because of the podcast, you think? Because before you were doing podcasts, before you were, like, broadcasting out an opinion to you don't even know who, you know, you might not think care. Because who's going to hear you say what you thought of this movie and how it you didn't finish it? But now, it's possible, like you just said, there might be someone out there listening who, you know.
I'd say that, but I've always broadcasted my opinion to people not knowing who, just walking down the street yelling at strangers.
I suppose that's true. But on the internet, you know, where anyone, like any part of the world can see it or
I hope not. I hope I'm not gaining a sense of responsibility because.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm
getting at. That would suck.
Yeah, that would be awful, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That's your job. Make you watch that damn movie.
I probably wouldn't finish it.
Oh, God. Oh, it was so awful. It was so awful.
What was the third one?
Third one was last night. On demand, I saw a movie that I'd been meaning to see for a while. Got really good critical reviews, and I was curious about it. It was a little Channel 4 film called Four Lions.
Like, four is the number four?
Yes,
or...
F-O-U-R, Lions. You haven't heard of this thing?
I don't think so.
Oh, this was a big deal. Because basically it was a comedy about some Muslims in Britain who want to become suicide bombers.
And it's a comedy?
It's a comedy. It's a serious comedy. Hmm. Like, yeah, it's a comedy. And, you know, I was expecting a lot of controversial stuff, very sort of black comedy of things, but it was just getting such amazing critical reviews that I wanted to check it out. And I checked it out, and I think I recommend it. It's one of those tricky movies that it's hard to have an opinion on. It was very thought-provoking, and parts of it I felt good about, parts of it I didn't. I think I recommend it. Hmm. It was very funny, very funny. And that's the thing. It started off sort of very funny and not very controversial, despite the subject. Mm-hmm. I was expecting it to be darker and sort of more controversial. And it's not like we ramp up to this. The opening scene is them practicing filming one of their, like, videos saying that they have, you know, done some horrible thing or whatever and talking about the capitalist system being... So it's not like people who eventually decide they're going to do this. We start and they're already militarized and everything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was remarkably silly and lighthearted, sort of. And then it just very slowly it changes, and you sort of almost don't notice. And it ends up with a whole lot of very thought-provoking stuff. But it just goes so gradual. It's very interesting. Hmm. And yeah, I think I would recommend it. Hmm. And yeah, it's got some hilarious bits in it. Because they all sort of... Like, they want to be suicide bombers, but you get the sense, like, they haven't ever really thought it through thing. Right, so it's a very sort of bumbling thing to start with. And all very hypothetical. Like, that they're going to do this sort of someday, and they're going to start the revolution and stuff. And think of that. Right. And yeah, I would recommend it, especially to you. It is British, and it has a lot of British people with heavy accents, including a lot of heavy sort of lower-class accents. So you got to be prepared for that. Watch it with some captions, or if you're familiar with the accents, you can work with that. So if you've seen Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, you can probably cope with the accents in this. But yeah, I would say I would recommend. I would recommend to you specifically, William. I think you might enjoy
it. I'll have to put it on the list, which is a long list.
Because you don't ever do nothing.
Well, It's hard. It's hard to find time.
Write these books, he said, with air quotes on an audio podcast.
Well, it's making progress, so I'm very happy with it. Which means in a few months you'll probably get a copy to read and criticize.
Yay!
Before I publish it, of course.
Yay!
Because I value the opinions of people who like to be mean to me.
And I like mocking and belittling you for hypothetical things, but it's just not the same as having something concrete that you have created and put part of yourself in. That's that right. I can slam and be like, this is shit. You have proven you can make an effort and that you should not.
There you go. That's exactly
and,
what I need.
And right now, to tell me that. Right now, I'm relegated to the, if you did make an effort, it would probably turn out you shouldn't. And that's not as satisfying for me.
No, nor for me.
And an odd segue that nobody will get but me, I finished the 5th Dresden Files book today.
Audio.
And I discovered this a while back with some books. The one real big downside to audiobooks at work is when somebody writes in a sex scene.
Oh.
Especially if it's a particularly explicit sex scene. That is very awkward. Nobody else can hear it, but you're just sitting there being like, I have to do my data entry. And meanwhile, people are saying all these filthy, filthy things in my head. And all these people are sitting around me and they don't know. It's sort of like, well, and you wouldn't be able to write, but if you're intoxicated with something and you get around people who aren't and you're like, gotta act normal, gotta maintain. It's that same sort of feel. But I discovered there's a new level of it today. Is when an author inserts an actually really good sex scene. It's even more awkward. Because normally with these kind of sex scenes, I'm like, yeah, like, if I wasn't at work, I'd just be like, oh my god, this is ridiculous. And I'd be like laughing and stuff, so it's just silly. But when it's a good one, you're like, man, I really wish I was not somewhere there are other people listening to this. Because this is kind of, this is nice. And the 5th book has a good one, in my opinion, but...
Is that unusual for the books to have, for the Dresden Files books to have sex scenes?
There's been a couple of sort of pseudo sex scenes, and they were decent in the very fact that they weren't particularly explicit and they weren't particularly long. So I didn't get the feeling that the author was like harping on that or anything. They just sort of, you know, it was a thing and it was a part of the story and they were going through it, and that was fine. And I didn't think much of it. This one is very, admittedly, I think also still a big sort of plot aspect. It's not gratuitous, but it was just nice. It was a good one.
Well, you know, that author originally started trying to write sort of Tolkien-esque
did fantasy fiction. I've had somebody talk about Jim Butcher and not liking Jim Butcher, but not having read any of the Dresden stuff.
Yeah, he wasn't very successful with that. Then I think he kind of wrote the first Dresden novel sort of on a lark, and it was, you know, so much better than the other stuff he was writing, at least according to
And I can see that, because the best things about it is our hero, Harry Dresden, is very plain-spoken and sarcastic in the midst of all these fantastic and amazing things, and so it sort of deflates the genre in a way that I enjoy. And so if he was trying to write to that genre before, it might have been more awkward. Anyway, we are about a half hour in. We should probably get to the hat.
Probably.
Magic hat. Tell us the... No, wait. We should have a chant or something. You should pull one out of there. And so help me, if you pull an Azure Talon one out, I will punch you in the mouth.
Maybe you better bring that back up. No. It's useless trivia, man.
Oh.
I have been spared.
Oh, maybe Ezzy just didn't like Azure Talon, because now it's useless trivia, man. She's back over here.
I this isn't really addressed to the hat, but I think it goes to the hat, because I don't think useless
trivia... It came out of the hat.
Right, but, you know, usually it says, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Some people are jerks.
How is Elvis, and have you spoken with him lately?
Oh.
Useless
trivia. Elvis is fine, and no, never.
You haven't spoken to Elvis lately. You don't know Elvis, as far as you are concerned, is dead. Don't argue with me.
No.
Supposedly knows Elvis.
No. This brings up an interesting point I was talking with Trish about the other day. So, Elvis, dead.
Well, I presume Elvis Presley, they mean. There's plenty of people named Elvis.
Anyway, Elvis, dead, 77, whatever it was. Constant stories everywhere. He's still alive. He's an alien. He's hiding out.
They made that movie with Bruce Campbell.
Yeah. There's tons and tons of stuff. Now, here's the thing I don't get. Mm-hmm. Why aren't we doing this about Michael Jackson yet?
I don't know. Why don't we? Why have we never?
How come everybody actually believes Michael's dead?
Why did we never do it about John Lennon? Why? You know.
Well, because see, here we're dealing with Elvis was a singular entity in a very strong way, and a very big spectacle.
As compared to John Lennon, you mean?
Yeah, but from a social perspective, I consider it very on par with Michael Jackson, if not more so. Michael Jackson seems to be like the one that you would say he's not dead, he's hiding out with aliens or stuff like that. Why hasn't that started?
Well, I don't know when it started with Elvis, for that matter. I mean,
I was born when he died.
I was fairly young, so I don't know when the Elvis sighting started or anything like that. Of course, another thing is you have to take into account the age we live in. UFO sightings are very different now than they used to be. Because now a person probably has a camera right on their phone. They can take a little picture, and then when you see the picture online, you can tell that, well, that's probably an experimental aircraft, or that's probably, you know.
Yeah.
Not like back in the day where the person had to describe it, and by the time it got to a media source that was going to reach you, they probably unconsciously even changed their story a number of times to make it more fantastic than it really was.
Trish's theory is that there just aren't that many guys walking around that kind of look like Michael Jackson.
I suppose that's...
And I said that's not true. There's LaToya, there's Janet, there's probably more. They all kind of look like Michael Jackson.
I suppose.
There's this kid named Blanket.
But yeah, my answer to this question would be Elvis is doing pretty well, I suppose, since he's dead. And since he's dead, I haven't spoken to him lately. Now...
Oh, you skeptic.
This, you know, the hat is supernatural, so it may have another opinion, but the hat, as you point out all the time, the hat doesn't talk. It just tells us what to talk about.
You reminded me, I saw a fourth movie this week.
Oh, about Elvis?
No, about the dead.
About dead Elvis?
I saw Witchboard 3, The Possession.
Witchboard, is that like a Ouija board or something?
Yes.
And there's more than one movie?
There's like... seven of them or something. Seven. There's a whole series of them.
Well, did they speak to Elvis in the movie?
Not in this one. In this one, it was a demon thing. I don't know. Or a guy. I don't know. It got really confusing. People possessed other people, and so actors had to play more than one part when they weren't really capable of even playing one. So it got weird.
And why do they keep making these?
Because they cost $4.
Oh, well, sure. I mean, if I had $4 and I could make...
Yeah, I mean, it's cheesy horror movies. There are so many, like, straight-to-DVD horror movie series out there, of which there are, like, tons and tons, but you don't know because you don't see stuff. I mean, like, Toxic Avenger had 4, I believe.
It did?
If not more. It had at least 4.
Wow.
Witchcraft has, like, 7. Hellraiser kept going.
Well, how do they... who keeps investing in these? Because it's not just $4. It's a lot of money. You know, they are paying actors and stuff.
Yeah, but I don't think they're paying a lot. I mean, obviously what it comes down to is the revenues outweigh the piddly cost of making them. You'd have to ask Full Moon Productions, who does a lot of this shit. Although they make really horrible ones. I don't watch most of Full Moon stuff anymore. They make terrible, terrible horror movies without boobs or with minimal boobs, and that to me is just defeating the purpose.
Because there's...
That's one of the important staples of a cheesy horror movie.
Oh, I see.
Boobs.
Because they're scary?
No.
Oh.
No.
Are we ready to move to the next thing?
Yes!
Thank you for that useless trivia, man. I'm sorry we couldn't give you more insight into what the hat thinks about Elvis.
Magic hat in a tree. Give us a question that we shall see. Oh, God damn it.
Who is it?
Who do you fucking think?
Are you going to kill yourself now?
Possibly.
I'll leave, because I don't want to watch that. Blue Claw.
Dear Mth, what's the deal with airplane food? I swear to fucking God, that's what he wrote.
That's an interesting God. Although, if you go back far enough, plenty of them do that.
You don't have to go back that far.
Let's see. What is the deal with airplane food?
Nothing. They don't serve it anymore.
Well, on long flights they do.
Yeah, really long flights.
Yeah, really long flights.
Most of the time nowadays, you can spend $25 for a snack bag or something.
Oh, well.
It's awful.
Is that what he's complaining about?
No, he's just quoting one of the most cliched stand-up lines in the history of the world.
Oh.
You never heard of a stand-up comedian?
No.
It was like the law in the 80s that you had to say, what's the deal with airplane food? That is the quintessential observational comic joke right there.
Because that was something that everybody experienced bad airplane food, exactly. But nobody ever talked about it. No, so in the comic.
But yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it's funny because it's true. Because they say, it's horrible. And you're like, ah.
Are you mad as you're telling now?
Yes. Actually, and I stole that line too. In the quickly killed but far underrated sitcom Better Off Ted, there was a line where he was attempting to do comedy and he said, "What's the deal with airplane food? Why don't they serve it anymore?"
Why don't they serve it
anymore? And I thought that was cute because when he said, "What's the deal with airplane food?" I kind of groaned, and then he said, "Why don't they serve it anymore?" And I was like, "Ah, that's an original take."
I've only had airplane food, you know, once because I had one transatlantic flight and I had food on it, and
back in the day they used to give you little snacks even on shorter ones.
Yeah. Oh, they don't do that anymore.
No,
like a little bag of peanuts or whatever.
If you're lucky, sometimes you get the bags, but usually no, it's just a menu now. You can buy some pretzels for $7,
huh,
or a little sandwich thing for $24, or
the airline industry really, you know, had a hard time there after September 11th and everything. I guess they're trying to recoup some of what they lost. Well, you know, I have a brother, well, he was, I don't know if you could say he's still in the airline industry or not. Not in the airline, like the passenger airline industry, but he was, and he had to get out of that business.
Yeah. Well, air travel's getting so ridiculously bad, I'm very close to not, I try and fly as little as possible now, and I'm close to just skipping altogether, and I know quite a few people who basically do that now. Who say, I would rather take a longer trip and have to go by train or by car than to fly, because it's just such a pain in the ass.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have this problem where my ears hurt when the plane lands. And it just always hurts really bad, and it's getting to the point where I don't even want to mess with it. But there's not really any place for me to fly. I don't have relatives that live far away or anything. Well, aside from my brother, because he lives in Alaska. And I would probably fly out there to see him. But
yeah.
But, you know, I don't have... Because you have relatives all over, so it'd be hard for you not to fly. Well, sort
of. My brother's in driving distance. I have to fly to see my family, and then when we do our summer vacation in Virginia, I pretty much have to fly out to that. I might not have to. Trish drives with her sister and their kids. But, yeah, at this point, those are pretty much the only two trips I still fly for. I hope the mic's picking you up. You're real quiet to me tonight.
Oh, well, you know, I still have a cold, so I'm trying to, I don't know.
Project!
Yeah.
Next
question, and hope it doesn't end in my death.
Yes. Okay, Ezzy wants to take a question out of the
head. Okay, Hat, if I know you don't like me much, but please don't let me die tonight. I have things I'm trying to do. Oh, good. I will live to see another day. Why are Girl Scout cookies so tasty? This is from your wife.
Wow, we're really getting some deep questions tonight.
I think it's because they make them with real Girl Scouts.
I don't have a rim shot, but I would give you one if I could.
I didn't, you know, make that up. That came from a movie, actually.
Yes. We know.
So, I think that's a pretty good question, really, because people do really like... Do you think, though, it's just an issue of they only come around once a year?
See, that's what I wonder. I wonder if somebody made Girl Scout cookies and had them all the time and they were just on your grocery shelf like all the rest, how would their sales do? I mean, at first, obviously, but I mean... over time.
Well, people would
Thin Mints are pretty freaking tasty. As much as I love the shortbread ones, the trefoils, they would not last very long because there's freaking Lorna Doone, which tastes better. They would die. The Caramel Delights, the samosas or whatever, those would probably do pretty well. And pretty much the rest of the cookies nobody pays any attention to anymore. The peanut butter ones are fine. The peanut butter sandwich ones just taste like Nutter Butters, so...
Yeah, it's easy to think that if they were more available and people could have them whenever they want, it would kind of take the fun out of it.
Yes.
But there is something else like that, that these candy bars that World's Greatest Candy Bars or something, I don't remember what they're called. I should probably be careful about what I say about them. But they come around every so often because, you know, like band kids will sell them, yes, or something. And they used to be a lot better than they are now.
Yeah, those are crap.
But,
And also, I hate sending kids to band camp.
Well, what I'm saying is that Girl Scout cookies have to be, you know, they have to have some, you know, they have to be kind of good.
Yeah.
Or else they wouldn't even be as sought after as they are. But,
And $3 a box, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
That's not a bad price, even if you go to a grocery store.
Thin Mints, I don't know anyone else that sells anything quite like them.
No, Thin Mints are unique. But, I mean, if you go buy a box of cookies at the grocery store, you'll pay about that.
Yeah.
Maybe more. And you're not giving to the kids or whatever. Those freaking candy bars have never been... at the market price. Those candy bars have never been priced anything comparable to an equal size candy bar at the store.
No, but there's a coupon on it that is worth the same as the candy bar, so technically you're getting
it for free.
So long as you frequent the place that the coupon's
exactly. On. So I think there's a pricing structure there, but yeah, those are pretty much made from grade F chocolate these days, and I hate sending kids to camp.
Well, they used to be really good. They used to be. I don't know what happened.
I think you were younger. It was when you ate meat. Chocolate tastes better when you're a meat eater.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
No, I think they just used better ingredients. And the almond ones used to have whole almonds, not little almond
dust.
Yeah. That's not as good. Sorry.
Peking Buffet's going to open up again soon.
I heard that.
Yeah.
Actually, because I drive past where it's opening. So.
Yes, it's getting closer. For those of you not from around here, which is just about everyone, Peking Buffet is this Chinese buffet in Coralville that was this awesome place. It was huge. Everybody would go there. It was so tasty. And when relatives would visit, we'd want to go there, and they'd go there. And then the flood of 2008 happened and pretty much put Coralville underwater.
Yeah.
Including that building.
Yep.
And... it was sitting there all rotted out and nasty, and then they bulldozed it, and we were all worried. And then the sign said, coming soon, a new 10,000 square foot. And we're like, awesome, it's coming back. And then nothing happened for like a year. And we're all like, it's not true. It's not coming back. They lied to us.
Right, it's been
and
a
then
while.
Beams were put up.
Yep.
And after that, they've been building. And now the building looks done. Maybe they have some interior work to do. I don't know. But it's got to be soon, and I'm very excited. Because it's tasty.
That's a little bonus. Didn't pull that from the hat.
No. We're talking about almonds, and I thought about almond cookies, thought about Chinese food, and I thought about them. And also because for date night, which is when we saw Four Lines and everything, we drove past there. And I was saying, like, I'm thinking about where we're going to go to eat. But, of course, if Peking Buffet is open, we're at Trump's everything, and we're going there. And Trisha's like, of course. But then it didn't happen.
That's too bad.
Went to La Cava again. Have you been to La Cava?
No.
New Mexican place out there. It's pretty tasty.
That's what I've heard.
It's good. We've been twice now. It's pretty good.
I don't know why I hear about all these restaurants. I don't hear about anything else, but I do hear about restaurants.
People like to talk about restaurants.
I guess they do.
What else was I saying? There's this great furniture store we discovered.
Furniture store?
No, that's my point. Oh. It doesn't make any sense to talk about other stuff like that.
Okay.
There's this great auto parts store that you should frequent.
Oh, I know a lot of people who would talk about that. This is Iowa. I think the hat's calling.
Iowa.
it's pretty obvious you're not from here.
Neither is Dar Williams. Trish hates when I sing that song. But then we went to a Dar Williams concert, and Dar Williams started singing it, and Trish looked evil at me, like, you better not start singing it. And then Dar Williams said, everybody, if you know it, sing along. And Trish had to let me do it, because Dar said so. It was awesome. Okay, whose turn? It's my turn, because I punched you in the face.
I forget. Where are you from? Somewhere in the east, or west, I mean.
One of those.
Oregon? No.
Oregon.
Are you? Okay.
Yes.
I knew I could remember if I really thought about it. Isn't Don't one of our friends
hurt
from,
yourself.
Isn't Tuttle from there? Or no?
I don't know.
Maybe he was from...
He smacks of being a Midwesterner. I don't know. No. But so do I now.
No.
I've turned into a Midwesterner.
No, you expensive. Haven't.
I really have.
Okay.
It's kind of scary. No, I noticed because when I used to go, like, I was here and everything is a little different. And then I would go back to the West Coast and everything would seem normal. And now, everything's normal here. And when I go back to the West Coast, everything feels a little odd.
Oh, well, then it's starting.
And, like, I hate not being able to pump my own gas, which is an Oregon thing. I am amazed at how aloof and not interested in other people's lives West Coasters are. I tell you what at the end of a sentence.
No, you don't.
I do.
Wow.
Yeah, it kind of scared me the day I did that. I don't do it often, but I have done it. I actually appreciate the beauty of a cornfield in all four seasons.
Wow.
Yeah, that kind of messed me up too.
But all of this is still just the beginning. I mean, you have a long way to go.
I was really confused that my parents weren't familiar with biscuits and gravy. Which admittedly is more of a southern thing, but it's pretty much moved its way up here.
Have you even been to the Iowa State Fair?
No, because I spent a lot of time at the Oregon State Fair, so I'm kind of burned out.
All right, well.
Anyway, here's a question from Lois Lane. Ooh.
Lois, wow.
Fancy. Wait, does that mean it's from Margot Kidder and during one of her drug-fueled rampages?
Margot, it could be Erica Durance, it could be
Terry Hatcher?
Yeah.
If it's Terry Hatcher, I'm quitting the podcast.
Well, we don't know.
Terry, if it's you, I'm quitting the podcast.
It's a magical talking hat, so it could be Lois Lane.
Oh, my God. Dear Kent, I know you're Superman. I'm going to jump off of this boat to prove the point. No, wait, sorry. Here we go. It's a question about art.
Oh, okay.
Can anyone be an artist, which is in quotes, in some form or fashion? Explain your reasoning.
Well.
Yeah, it's like, show your work. Lois was terrified that we would just say yes or no and move on, because that's so our style.
Yeah, we always do that.
Can anyone be an
artist?
That's
why we're just burning through the questions. It's
absolutely.
Yes, no.
Yes.
Okay, next.
Yes.
Let me look at this one.
Because you don't believe me?
Well, what is your opinion?
Absolutely.
Well, of course, my opinion is everyone is an artist in one form or another.
That's because you're a refugee from Up With People.
But, I mean, being an artist is just, expressing yourself in some creative way, and everybody does that to some degree.
Yeah.
All the time.
I have a very loose definition of art and consider it, I mean, everybody considers, well, not everybody, most people consider art subjective definitively.
Mm-hmm.
I consider it subjective largely from the perspective of the creator.
Well, yeah,
I said that as though it was with a capital C. I did not mean it. I meant the one who creates the art.
Yeah.
Which is to say that by and large, if someone does something that they believe is art, I believe that they're right.
Well, sure. Sure.
Now, if somebody does something and says that it's art, but they don't really believe it's art, then it's not art. And personally, there's a lot of art that I hate. And personally, I think Christo is a big joke, but he believes it's art, so it's art. It's just really stupid art.
Yeah, I think I would have to pretty much go along with that. I mean, today we live in a culture that's very unlike, you know, what human culture was like for thousands and thousands of years. We have celebrity, right? We have people who artists who are known for whatever it is they do artistically, but there's no real objective way to determine that what they do is better than what other artists like them do. They just happen to be really famous for it. And so we kind of have this mindset that there's this class of people called artists, and they're the ones who are exceptionally talented at something. But how do we even determine who is exceptionally talented and who isn't? By what standards do we make these judgments?
But I don't want to throw out the entire field of artistic criticism, because I, in college in particular, I was really sort of introduced to literary criticism in particular, and of like poetry and so forth. And I always, you know, kind of thought, like, oh, they're just making shit up. And then, you know, oh, this is indicative of this or whatever. And I found that there's a lot, and there's a tremendous amount of meaning I could get out of things.
Right, but you can apply
otherwise.
You can apply the principles of literary criticism, or even, you know, the musical criticism, or, you know, sculpture criticism, whatever. You can apply those rules to anyone's work of art. And you can find that, you know, these types of thinking or schools of thought, I mean, they don't apply just to specific artists or specific...
Well, okay, let me try this on you. So, art is psychological, or even one could say psycho-spiritual in nature. It comes from the individual consciousness and manifests however the consciousness sees fit.
I suppose.
Artistic criticism comes from society and is wholly created and defined by societal norms.
Yeah, I mean, well... I mean, I've read a lot of literary criticism that seems to be more... I mean, it's not really making value judgments, for example, about the quality of the work or what the work is saying. It's more about trying to... I don't want to say deconstruct, but trying to get a handle on what type of environment the story emerged in or came out of. You know, what the background of the person is who wrote it, how it's read today, how it might be different than how it used to be read, which strikes me as being almost an anthropological approach, which is somewhat more scientific than just saying, well, this is a good piece of literature because of X, Y, and Z, and this is not so good because of X, Y, and Z.
Yes. But, like, well, for example, and this one always fascinated me, they've done this with a few things, you take abstract artists, and you take serious... abstract artists who are still unknown, but new ones that are considered to be big talents, and you have them make something, and then you take your five-year-old, and you have them make something with the same medium, we'll say, the same type of paint or whatever. If you give that to art critics, like qualified art critics, by and large, they'll say, like, oh, this is very interesting, and this, you know, there's a lot of stuff here. And the five-year-old one, they'll be like, this person did not know what they were doing.
That's exactly right.
And I find that amazing.
But not...
Because I couldn't do that.
Well, you can't because you haven't... You don't have a certain experience. It's kind of like... There are musical pieces that people will listen to and think, this is just a bunch of people warming up or something. I mean, it's not even really music. But a person who is sophisticated in advanced musical theory, they... hear something completely different, and they can tell the difference between that and something someone's just making up. You might not be able to. I might not be able to, but someone who's sophisticated in it. So the point is there is some art paintings, you know, out there that to an untrained eye do look like some kid was finger painting or whatever, but it's not that at all. And once you learn a few things about art, you start to understand what it's really about, and you can distinguish between something that's made by a five-year-old. There's other things like this, too. Like, you know, Mythbusters will often have myths that are based on... Like, one of them they had was about vodka, and if a vodka that's... this was the myth.
Oh, it was top-shelf vodka versus filtering it through the Brita filter.
Yes.
And they found out that the people who are really experienced and have a palate for it can tell the difference.
Yes, yes.
But most of the others could not.
Well, most other people can't. But I found that very interesting.
I went out and bought a Brita filter.
Well, the point is that... But see, that's really about learning how to discriminate, you know, this versus that.
Yeah, but I think it very much on societal definitions.
Yeah, well, yes, exactly, because the abstract art that the person can recognize as opposed to a five-year-old's whatever, it's because they are participating in a culture that they're, I guess that's what I mean to say, they're acculturated to what fine art is supposed to be and what fine art is supposed to look like.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that something else isn't.
No, but I mean, even the discriminations, even if you say there's not a lot of value judgment, the discrimination inherently is a value judgment, because to say this one is more, you know, aggressive, this one is more, the colors in this one are more anything. You say the colors in this one are more warm than this one. That is a societal and a cultural definition.
No, that's right.
Of that, and in a different society, which is why also it gets weird when you pull up these old archaeological things and you're like, oh, this is artwork back then. And you're like, I wonder what they thought of it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How would they have critiqued this art at the time?
That's right.
Because it had different definitions.
That's right.
We're getting kind of deep and serious here. It's kind of scaring me.
Well, we have conversations.
Hold me,
like
William.
This a lot.
Hold me. I'm nervous and sweaty. Ugh.
Do we need to get another question then before you pass?
I don't know if we have enough time for another question.
Oh, really? What time is it?
We're about 56 and a half minutes.
Oh. Well, I guess it's time to wrap up and
I think
plug
it is.
Your things and do whatever.
Do you have things you need to plug, mister?
No, not. Well, I always like to plug my website,
JesusIsMyGrandpappy.com.
Lots of stuff on there to look at. And,
have you been getting more traffic?
I can't really tell because, you know, the spam bots are always trolling the site. So.
We have a new milestone in that our website now has spam attacks.
Yeah, I get a lot of those.
We
so
had comments from those. And we had no other commentary this week but the spam ones. Fortunately, they were really obvious. But people who are interested should go to our website, check it out. TheMagicalTalkingHat.com is our website. It is soon going to go through some changes, probably, as I figure out exactly what new and exciting powers I have with this new domain. But you should go there. You can get little wind-ups about the episodes, occasionally little other stuff. People comment on things there. When we were talking about games a lot, people got in with what their favorite games are.
Cup of tea,
how to make a good cup of tea, all that stuff is there, so you should definitely go check that out. And you can give us feedback there, let us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, that you're actually out there and listening. If you would like to submit feedback, or more importantly, if you would like to email the hat such that we can have topics and questions and your voice can be heard, please email the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. In your email, be sure to specify if it's not meant to be a question, if it's just feedback or something. And also be sure to specify what name you want your question under. I will not just use the name from a generic signature or from the email itself. So if you don't specify, like sign it or say what name you want or something like that, I'll just leave it as anonymous, which is also fine. Up to you. I mean, the hat will leave it as anonymous. Sorry. So yeah, email us there. Let us know you're out there. We appreciate our listeners and all their feedback, except for the ones I say I hate, which William still loves them because I'm the jerk in this relationship.
Yes, I do want to thank Azure Talon for submitting a question, and Tony's wife, and Lois Lane, and Useless Trivia Man.
And Mark for his thing.
For all the things that Mark
maybe
does.
I will put those links in there for the things because the Escape Artist podcasts are awesome. And Mark likes the other one, so we'll put that on there, too. Check that out. Those are some very cool links. I have heard rumor that a listener of the show may be starting their own podcast soon.
Really?
So at such time as that happens, of course, we will pimp that out for them to help them out. I have no idea what it's going to be about. I get a hint, a sense that maybe it will be about some actual thing rather than a magical hat.
What the magical hat is an actual thing.
I know, but still.
We're talking about whatever the hat tells us to talk about.
Exactly.
Not exactly talking about
what our listeners are telling us. Yeah, I had somebody tell me that our our show was not that geeky. It was kind of geeky, but not that geeky.
Well, we haven't gotten a lot of geeky questions.
I mean, no, but it was really kind of out of context. It was a very weird thing. But he just said that, and I'm like, well, you know, we get what the listeners give us. We have a lot of geeks out there. But
yes, we do. And we answer in geeky ways, I suppose, sometimes.
I don't. Just you.
Oh, well, I do. That's what I meant.
I answer in suave and sexy ways.
Well, okay.
I do everything in suave and sexy ways.
If you say so.
Okay. I think that's about it, because I really want to open the windows again, because it's freaking hot. So that's all from Tony and William. Please disregard the last almost hour and 1 minute. And good night.
Good night. See you next week.
And next week will be funny accent episode.
Oh, no.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.